Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking. And welcome to another episode of Fan Junkies Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Ragus. Alongside me, as always, my co-host, Mike McShane. What's going on, Bell?
How are we doing today, Jonathan? I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. A little touch of a cold, I think, I'd get.
Uh-oh. Everybody's getting it, man. Now it's your turn.
Yeah, it would be the first one if I get one. So I'm hoping it's not. I'm hoping it's just maybe a little bit of allergies or something.
That would be nice, but it's too cold out there, man. I don't know.
It is. It is. We're supposed to get a little touch of snow this afternoon.
Yep. Yep. They're already spraying the streets, man. So.
Are they?
If you're driving out there today, be safe.
Yeah, well, fortunately, I don't think it's supposed to be as bad as what they were originally projecting way back at the beginning of the week. They were saying it could be get as much as 8 inches, but it looks like it's just going to be maybe 2.
Well, I hope not, because I really don't feel like shoveling, because then I'd be called like Carl Pavano, and I'd probably rupture my spleen.
Exactly. I was just about to say, you know, that's a dangerous thing to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, watch out for those shoveling. You know, watch out for those shovels, everybody.
My gosh, rupture your spleen.
It's, you know...
Shoveling snow. Holy smokes.
I mean, how much snow is he shoveling to rupture his spleen?
My gosh.
That's, it's kind of crazy. But, yeah, it's, Friday. I know everybody's happy about that.
Yeah.
Friday, we're heading towards the weekend. Hopefully, it's a nice weekend for everybody. But we have a lot of things to talk about, Mike. We're going to be touching on the NFL. We're going to be touching on Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, and guess what? NBA. So we're going to touch on all four topics today, hopefully.
We got all four sports covered.
As long as you and I don't ramble.
What's that?
I said as long as you and I don't ramble, we'll be able to touch all four.
I can't guarantee anything, Jonathan. You know me.
Yeah, well.
I can't guarantee anything.
Either, Mike, so. All right, well, anyway, if you're listening in, here's the call-in number. You can always call in during the show. We always welcome that. It's 347-237-5373. Call in. Let us know what's on your mind.
And it'll stop me from rambling.
Yes, it will. If Mike is rambling, you know what to do.
You got to call in.
Call in at 347-237-5373. But, Mike, let's talk about the NFL first. We have a few topics in NFL we want to touch on. First are these fines. You and I live it over this. So let's discuss it. First, Tom Brady is fined $10,000 by the National Football League for basically super kicking Ed Reed right in the crotch.
Yep.
Trying to rip his sack off with his cleat, if
uh-huh.
you say. That's fine and dandy. He deserved to be fined. It was intentional. Everybody saw it. If you don't think it was intentional, it's time for you to go to Lens Crafters. Then here comes a second fine, Mike, which is what you sent to me. We spoke about this. We were both pissed beyond belief. Frank Gore fined $10,500, that's $500 more than Tom Brady's fine, for having his socks too low.
Yeah.
Mike, what the hell is going on in the National Football League? What the hell is the matter with them where player safety means less than NFL attire?
Yeah. You know, both these stories were reported yesterday. And, you know, Jonathan, what shocks me a little bit about it is that I have yet to hear anybody do exactly what we're doing right now. Now, I listen to a lot of talk radio. I listen to a lot of sports chat on television and on the radios and what have you. No one has done exactly what we're doing right now, which is to take the two stories and put them side by side.
Yeah.
When you put them side by side, this is absolutely the most ludicrous thing. I want everybody to think about this for a moment. I saw on Sunday Tom Brady go down, and it appeared, as I watched it live, I'm sitting there going, oh, man, that looked like it was purposeful.
Yeah. And it was.
Now, regardless of whether you think it was purposeful or not, whether you're a Patriots fan or not, whether you're a Tom Brady fan or not, the fact of the matter is the NFL viewed it and deemed it purposeful, and so therefore they fined him.
Yes.
And so, therefore, I walk away and I go, okay, fine. Look, whether I agree with that ruling or not, it's irrelevant. Tom Brady was fined, and yeah, it certainly looked like that was his intent.
Yes.
But then to have Frank Gore getting a fine, as you point out, that's in excess monetarily, then what Brady was fined for is an absolute slap in the face to player safety.
By the way,
it's a joke.
Absolutely. And if you watch the game, I didn't see anything wrong with Frank Gore's socks that I didn't see on other people. I thought his uniform and his socks and everything were totally fine.
Right.
Seriously, who is sitting there saying, well, his socks half an inch lower than Michael Crabtree, so he needs to be fined?
Sure.
You know?
Right. Well, you know, and we were discussing this here at the frat house last night a little bit. And, you know, Brandon made the point, and he said to me, he said, look, there's nothing you can do about it. The attire rules, that is, how uniforms are to be worn, is part of the CBA, and there's no getting around it. Those fines apparently are set by the CBA.
They are set by the CBA, yes, they are.
Whether you agree with them or not, you know, it's just a matter of enforcement. But to me, it's a bass-ackward enforcement.
I'm sorry. Listen, it's not like he was wearing socks that were, gleaming with glitter or silver. You know what I mean?
Right.
He was wearing the appropriate attire. They were just a little low, supposedly, which I still watched. I checked out footage from the game a few times now. I don't see what the difference was between him and other players on the field.
Well, and my question is, did he wear them that way the entire game? Were they lower the entire game, or was it a situation where perhaps maybe they dropped at one point? You know what I'm saying?
Well, listen, this guy is getting tackled.
Yeah, exactly.
By various people, and I'm sure, and as you know, uniforms shift, jerseys, pants, pads, helmets, whatever, socks can do the same thing.
Right.
But was he wearing them the same way the whole game? Right. I saw certain times where I thought his socks weren't low. I mean, who cares? They're socks. They were low. What the hell? You know?
Well, I think, though, see, and you know, I hear Brandon. I hear what he's saying. All right.
I hear it as well.
No, it's set by the CBA. I understand all that.
It is set by the CBA.
But you can't tell me that something like this shouldn't be reviewed. I mean, this should be looked at.
But even so, a $10,500 fine, I mean, for something that minimal.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, it's not like he was wearing his jersey backwards and it was going to embarrass the NFL and the San Francisco 49ers.
Right.
His socks were too low. Fine him $500.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Put it towards charity. $10,500, a bigger fine than what Brady got for intentionally trying to hurt somebody.
And that's my point. See, that's where I think it needs to be reviewed. It needs to be reviewed as a total from the standpoint of when you're levying fines, and one fine is for an allegation where you're purposely trying to injure someone else, and then one is for, you know, the fact you're, you know, my tie's crooked. I mean, that's ridiculous.
It's beyond stupid. It really is beyond
absolutely ludicrous. Ludicrous.
Well, you know what? Before we go any quicker, guess what? We got Jim Williams with us, and hopefully we can hear him because he's calling in via Skype. Jim, you there, buddy?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can. Are you in a Verizon commercial?
You know what? I'd like to think that this whole Frank Gore, fine was made not by Roger Goodell, but by Tim Gunn of Project Runway. Because he did not make it work with the socks, if you will.
All right, but seriously, in all seriousness, Jim, $10,500 for wearing your socks too low compared to Tom Brady, a $10,000 fine for intentionally trying to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and a cleat to the groin area, I mean, that could have been a really severe injury there.
Oh, it certainly could have been in more ways than one. This also... Go ahead. I'm sorry, John.
No, I said how much of a joke is it?
It's more sad than anything else because it doesn't just speak to player safety. It speaks to preferential treatment to the golden boy. That's what this really comes down to, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I don't know about that, Jim.
I'm 100% confident. I mean, it took so long for them to even find Tom Brady. And, of course, he had to get the bare minimum of the $10,000. I think there's some preferential treatment.
It took a few days either, you know. A few days to come out and find him for that, you know. Next day should have been easily fined. So.
Well, wait a minute. It came out when? When did I send it over to you?
2 days after the game, I believe.
How many?
after the game, I think.
It was Wednesday, yes? Was it Wednesday?
Wednesday.
Well, I mean, that's not... I mean, you know,
Wednesday? Come on.
Wait a minute. The fine for Gore came out the same day.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But
we're talking about player safety to a player's socks.
Well, exactly.
See a player's socks being fined days after a game because that's not important. Player safety should be the most important thing.
It's almost as if they decided to find something ludicrous to find just to prove to Tom, hey, you're still number one. You're okay in our book. We know you're our cash cow.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, Jim, you're right, because there's a golden boy in every sport.
Thank you so much.
Well, Jim, let me ask you a question. What do you think would have been more appropriate?
For the Brady fine?
Yes.
That's the kind of thing you want to send a message for. And I'm going to agree with Dan Patrick on this after watching his well-listened-to radio program on TV. A $25,000 fine, I think if it was like double or triple what he was actually fined, it would have said something, I think.
Okay.
I mean, I know, $25,000 to Tom Brady, that's throwaway money, I know that. But just the fact that it wasn't the bare minimum,
yeah.
If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, is that what the is $10,000 the bare minimum fine for something like this? I guess that's my question.
First offense, yeah. First offense, that's the bare minimum. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because Ndamukong Suh got that $30,000 for when he put his foot into the groin of Matt Schaub. And, you know, $30,000 because Suh is, you know, he's had many infractions before that. So he's
Ndamukong Suh $10,000 ago was a long time ago, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, but you know, wait a minute. Listen to what you're saying. Now, we're talking first offense, all right, as Jim just pointed out.
Yeah.
Versus what you're talking about with Sue, where it was multiple offenses. All right, so on a first offense for Brady, then the fine would be appropriate from the standpoint of levying fines.
Well, all right. Well, here's my opinion. You guys tell me if you think I'm stupid or if you think I'm wrong or not. I think that there should be set fines for certain infractions.
Agreed.
When it's something of this nature, where it could be a real devastating injury, a late helmet to helmet hit way after a whistle, an intentional kick to somebody's groin of this nature, I think it should be a higher fine. This is not like it was a late tackle out of bounds after the whistle that really couldn't have hurt the player. You know, that could be like a $10,000 fine. But when it's something of this nature that could, you know, with a high chance of a devastating injury, Mike.
I agree.
I think it should be a higher set fine. But, of course, it's not. So, of course, it's the $10,000 fine. First infraction for Tom Brady, we get that. But, you know, my opinion, it should have been a higher fine, but they can't do it, unfortunately.
I agree with you, Jonathan. I think what they need to do is actually take a look at the type of violations and then rule appropriately based on that violation. As you're pointing out, you know, a late hit out of bounds, something to that effect, maybe it's a lesser amount, but something like this, which appear to be more egregious, should probably have something higher. But then also, I think that, as you point out with Sue, there needs to be like a sliding scale upward for multiple offenses.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let me ask you guys this. Let me throw this out there. And Jim, you answer first. In the MLB, in the NHL, in the NBA, if a player did this kind of tactic to another player, they most likely would have been thrown out of the game. You never see this in the NFL. Should the NFL adapt something of a flagrant foul type thing where if something like this happens, not only do you lose yardage, but a player should be able to be kicked out of a game?
Well, the NFL, in all technicality, does do this, that you can be thrown out of a game. But it's very rare, exactly. It's very,
very
rarely.
Rare. Yeah.
I wouldn't be against it. But again, it comes to the conundrum that is discretion of the person who's the arbiter. Because some referees understand, well, this is the NFL, the most violent sport in all the world, da-da-da-da-da. This kind of stuff is supposed to happen. That's what puts butts in the seats.
Well, yeah, during play, I can understand it. But when it's an intentional nature of a guy kicking another guy.
Well, again, it comes down to the arbiter. If the referees don't see it, and obviously they didn't see it initially, you know, you can get away with, I don't want to say murder, but you can almost get away with that in the NFL and its current product.
Yeah. Hmm. Mike,
so
what do you
it's tough to jurisdict, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Mike, what do you think, man? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I agree with you that I think, you know, absolutely, in Major League Baseball, if something like this happened, they're out of the game.
Yeah.
In the NBA, they're out of the game. You've got to do something pretty severe on the ice to get thrown out of a game in the NHL.
Not really. We've already had a couple of game misconducts over something that was nothing of the nature of this over the last few games. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, players, game misconduct, you're gone. You know, that's
exactly.
It.
I agree with Jim that I think that, you know, there's a slightly different mentality with the NFL. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's a shorter season. Mm-hmm. You're not playing near as many games as you are in Major League Baseball or in the NHL. And so, therefore, I think there's a little more leniency to actually removing games from a player's portfolio.
Yeah,
excellent.
I don't know.
Point.
To me, I think it would send a bigger message. Not only did Tom Brady get kicked out of the game for such a disgusting display on the field, which not only embarrassed the Patriots but embarrassed the NFL, in my opinion. But then on top of the $10,000 fine, I think we could have been more acceptable to it.
Well, play devil's advocate though, Jonathan.
Oh, sure.
What would be the big story on Monday? Had they thrown Tom Brady out of the game, would it have been that the New England Patriots lost the game? Or that Tom Brady was thrown out? I can just see the media exploding with furor over that one.
Well, of course, because, you know, it would have been the first time something like that happened. But eventually it's going to have to happen.
Yeah.
You know, my opinion. So,
I mean, it's one thing if we're talking the regular season. You know, we're talking about – here you're talking about the AFC Championship game.
I don't care what game it is. If
yeah, but you know something –
like that.
The media is going to come in there and try to paint.
The media is going to do whatever they want to do anyway. It doesn't matter if he's in
or out. They're going to paint the picture. They're going to attempt to paint the picture that, in fact, there was an attempt to manipulate the game by doing that.
You know what? If it's as clear as day, something like that, I don't see how that's any way somebody manipulating the game. That's Tom Brady losing it for his team himself. So.
But my point is, this is what's going on in the heads of some of the guys out there that are officiating the game. Make no mistake.
True.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, they have too much power. So. All right, let's go over to another topic here, NFL. New York Jets, Darrell Revis. A lot of rumors going out now that the Jets might be looking to trade Darrell Revis because of the contract he's going to demand on top of coming off yet another injury. Is it worth it for the Jets to sign him? Darrell Revis, one guy on a 53-man roster. The Jets need at least 52 more players to compete next year. So, do you sign the one player? Do you try to trade Darrell Revis and get what you can to rebuild a Jets team that needs to be rebuilt now? Mike, what do you think?
All right, my question, Jonathan, I'm going to throw it at you, since you're our resident Jets expert here. What in the world is Johnson thinking of? Are you kidding me? Yes, you've got to sign this guy. And I do not understand why there would even be a question about it. You know, I understand that there might be some monetary issues that have to be, taken a look at here. I know that the team is in a state of flux. I know that there are probably going to be some personnel changes that are going to be made in the off season.
Yeah.
But what in the world are you talking about? This guy is probably the best at his position in the entire NFL.
Absolutely. But he needs to stay in the field. That's where we got to go here. Now, you know, playing devil's advocate as well as being the resident Jets fan here, I could see both sides. I could see why they would explore to trade Darrell Revis. At the same time, I don't see him going anywhere because they're not going to get a package of what Darrell Revis is worth on the field.
I disagree with you.
They're not. They're not going to get it. They're going to need somebody to step in right away into Darrell Revis's spot to be able to play football next season. They don't have anybody like that.
Wait a minute.
I don't think they're going to get a cornerback like that from anybody on top of this deal where they're going to want draft picks as well.
Absolutely.
Not going to happen.
I'm going to tell you right now, I would trade the Eagles' first round for him in a minute.
Oh, yeah, you would trade the Eagles' first round. He's going to be worth more than just the first round pick, though.
All right, what else do you want?
They're going to need somebody to cover that cornerback spot because if they're going to go offense finally via the draft, they're going to need somebody to come back in that deal that's going to be able to play cornerback.
I don't think they're thinking about that, Jonathan. I think they're thinking about trying to rebuild the team. That's what I think they're thinking. I think they're trying to figure out a way that they can get the most for their dollar with Darrell Revis. And the bottom line is I don't think they give a damn whether they're going to cover the corner or not. If they can transfer his corner position into two or three other positions on that team, and one of them just happens to be the corner, great. If it's not, I don't think they care.
Okay, so you're all for trading the Eagles' first-round pick to get Darrell Revis.
I'm saying I would do it.
And you think that's what it would take to get Darrell Revis?
I just said, what else do you want?
Well, I'm saying, but you first said, I am. You first said, I am okay trading my first-round pick.
Absolutely.
Before we talked about anything else. So right off the bat, you thought Darrell Revis would be worth a first-round pick.
Yes.
And that's it.
I'm saying I think he's worth the first round pick.
Okay, but the Jets are stupid to try to trade him.
If you want something, I think they are.
Okay, but he's only worth the first round pick. The best cornerback in the league is worth the first round pick, and that's it. But the Jets are stupid to try to trade him.
Okay, I'm not sure what your point is.
Jim, please.
Hi, how you doing? Well, here I agree that if. I'd love for Chip to make the move. It's never going to happen because I think if Jets ownership has half a brain, and I know right now that's saying a lot, they will not just sign him. They will back the Brinks truck up to his house and pay the man the money he wants.
Yeah.
He is the foundation for that team. You mm-hmm. build around your foundation. That's just common logic.
Absolutely.
And, you know, he is the center of that defense. He can do more shaping the minds of his colleagues on defense than any defensive coordinator can, in my humble opinion. No matter how bad the defensive coordinator is in New York, I think I understand what you were getting at, John, with Mike talking about what is he worth? Is it just a first round pick? Do you throw in a couple of conditional picks later in the rounds? He's worth it more than a first. He's worth a first, probably another pick or two later on in the late first day, early second day of the draft, just to make it, you know, round out a little bit. But I can't see them as dumb as they are. No disrespect, John, because I know this
no,
is
no, because they are very dumb, and I agree with that.
I can't
see
them not signing him long-term. They have to sign him long-term to at least a 5 or 6 year deal. They have to save face.
All right, but wait a minute. This story did not come from, you know, some social column, gossip columnist trying to make the news. The rumor of this, the actual statement of this, came directly from the Jets organization. Why would you make that statement if in fact they're going to sign him?
Well, not necessarily, too. You know, Woody Johnson did deny it that it wasn't said. Yeah, he doesn't talk about players' contracts. So,
wait a minute. Who was it who actually made the statement? Who was it from the Jets organization that actually made the statement that they might be, all right? They didn't say they would be. They said they might be interested in looking at a trade for Darrell Revis.
Well, of course. He's a free. You know what? He's going to be a free agent. They're worried about the money. They're so far over the cap as it is. Of course they might be interested in trading. I mean, what team might not be interested? I mean, if they're going to rip off a team to get him, to get what they want, it's a possibility. I just don't see them trading him. It would be a dumb move, you know?
It's corporate speak. Everybody on your 53-man roster is expendable when you get right down to it. Most people, but of course, your star player usually is not.
Yeah. But at the same time, too, now let's see if they do go out and trade Darrell Revis and get a first-round pick. Mike, you yourself said that this draft is a very, very weak draft.
Uh-huh.
Is there anybody, let's say, if they would get the Chiefs number one, the Jaguars number two, the Raiders number three, the Eagles four, the Lions five. Is there anybody that's going to go in those first five picks that could be a game-changing builder for the New York Jets in the future?
Well, I think certainly there are. Yeah, I think anywhere in that. Yes, you're right. I have pointed out that this is a weak draft, that this is a weak class all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
However, when I don't care, you know, what year it is, and I don't care how weak the draft is.
Okay.
If you've got a top five, even a top seven, eight, nine,
mm-hmm.
In any given year, you're going to end up getting a good player.
Okay. Number one, they need a quarterback right away. So you know if they get a first-round pick, they're going quarterback.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
If they get the Eagles number four, Geno Smith is not going to be there.
I disagree with you.
You don't think Kansas City is going to go after Geno Smith?
I'm not sold on it necessarily, no.
Okay. Geno Smith is most likely going to go to the Chiefs, the Jags, or the Raiders. If he falls to the Eagles, possibility, yes. But I think it's a far one. Now you got Matt Barkley. You got, what the hell is that other guy's name? From North Carolina. Mike Lennon.
Yeah, you got Ryan Nassib.
Yes, exactly. Now, are any of those three guys, could they be a future perennial Pro Bowl-type quarterback that could turn the Jets around in the future?
I'll tell you right now, of the four that you just mentioned, the one that I'm most high on of those four is Ryan Nassib.
Okay. Okay. He's going pretty far down, though, in the mock drafts I've seen.
He's actually coming up right now.
Is he coming up now?
Yes.
Hmm.
All right. So basically,
and I'm going to tell you right now.
All three of us agree. Jets would be stupid to trade Darrell Revis.
Yes.
Okay. That's the general consensus.
We're okay. Yeah. Show of hands. We all agree on that one.
I.
Okay. But the Jets are going to want to move up. If the Jets can move up in the draft, though, they have the number 9 pick.
Okay.
So there is a good possibility that they could get a Matt Barkley or a Mike Glennon or the guy. You like Mike. There is a very big possibility. But if they would, let's say, package that number 9 pick with somebody, would they still be able to move up in the draft without trading Darrell Revis?
Yes.
Easily.
Yes. There has been talk that the Eagles, in fact, are looking to trade down.
Okay. The thing I like about it, though, is that all these mock drafts, they have the Jets picking defensive end, which is really, really funny in my mind.
I agree with you. I think that is a mistake for this team.
Between Quentin Copples, Muhammad Wilkerson, who've had a good season last year and are only going to get better as they mature, why would you need another defensive end?
Absolutely.
Everybody keeps picking, what's his name, from Florida State, that Bijan Werner?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why?
Mm. Jonathan, I'm telling you, I don't get it either. Every mock draft I have seen, I have questioned what they had down as the Jets pick.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
They need offense. They need quarterback.
Correct.
Or running back.
Correct.
That's it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, man, this one guy from NFL.com, Charles Davis, he's got Geno Smith going number 7 to Arizona.
And see, this is what I'm saying. I'm not convinced that Geno Smith is going to necessarily go to KC.
Yeah.
I did see one mock draft where he was going to KC,
yeah.
But I've only seen one.
Yes. But, I mean, seriously, there are the first four picks are teams that could use a quarterback. I
sure.
Think we're slipping down that far, you know.
And
Kansas City and Jacksonville, if they pass up on Geno Smith, I really don't know what they'd be doing down there.
All the more reason why you're going to see some of these, what would be in other years, lower-ranked QBs coming out. You're going to see their value artificially inflated as we get closer and closer to April.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are teams out there that, and I've used the phrase this way, it is a QB-starved league right now.
Yes. It is. I got to give props, though, to Albert Breer over at NFL.com. He actually has the Jets going offense, but offensive guard.
Talking draft positions, though, one of the things that shocks me that was reported last night was there's been speculation that somebody like Manti Te'o could drop as low as 31st. This was a guy that just, 6 weeks ago was being touted as a top 5.
Yeah, yeah.
Imaginary girlfriends will do that, apparently. Sad to say.
Listen, if Manti Te'o could have an imaginary girlfriend and go for whatever, how many months or years he was talking to some dude on the phone who was pretending to be a girl, I mean, honestly, teams could probably trick Manti Te'o into believing that he plays for them and he'd just probably hand them the ball.
They could probably pick him at 31st and convince him that he was picked number 3.
It's a sad state of affairs.
Well, you know what? They could pick him first. Pretend he was picked in the 3rd round and save a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, jeez.
I like that.
Boy, that's a New Yorker thinking right there.
That's hoodwinking at its finest.
James, if you need a good general manager.
Listen, what are the Jets doing, man? They need you.
Hey, listen, let me say, I like the Jets hiring of John Idzik. I really want to see what he's going to be able to do here. I think time to turn the
That's who it was who actually made the comment. Am I correct? Wasn't it Idzik that made the comment? That
really... No, because they asked him at the press conference totally sidestepped it. He says, that's nothing for me. He goes, Rex, show me my office first before I talk about any player.
Okay. You know? I wanted to set the record straight. I thought I had read that. Did I read that? Was that incorrectly reported?
That was definitely incorrectly reported because I watched the press conference and two reporters asked him about Darrell Revis and he totally sidestepped it. So.
Okay.
Definitely.
Well, as well he should, walking in, you know, fresh and not having had a chance to look at everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, Revis did throw out a tweet, though, said, "I'm speechless by far, but more importantly, I feel more upset for the Jet Nation for having to go through this."
And, you know, let me ask you a question, Jonathan. What does he mean by that statement? I was a little bit –
I guess because he feels that the Jets, you know, because of who he is, what he is, that he's going to get max deal from the Jets and he's going to retire there, you know?
Well, that almost sounds like an apology.
Yeah, he is. Listen, he's held out how many times? I think he's held out twice already.
Yeah,
you know?
I think you're
and,
correct.
You know what? He's probably finally maturing a little bit and saying, "Hey, Jet Nation, I'm sorry we have to go through this again."
Yeah.
You know, because the first two times it was all on him for holding out. You know, I do not like when players hold out on their existing contracts. You shouldn't have signed it in the first place if you're going to hold out. You know, play for your contract, play for your future contract. That's it.
I agree.
All right. Real quick, because we have about 28 minutes left in the show, and we want to hit on a couple other things real quick. Jim, I don't know if you know about this, but a lot of stuff floating around here about the Dallas Cowboys. Mike, I'm going to give you the ball on this one.
Well, it's interesting what's happening down there at this point, right at this point. Jason Garrett, for all intent and purpose, I used a phrase here last night at the frat house. I said he's, for all intent and purpose, he's been emasculated at this point by Jones. I mean, let's get it straight.
Yeah.
He's got Callahan in there now making calling the offensive calls. You know, I'm wondering what in the world is Garrett's role at this point? We've got Monty Kiffin coming in as well, and Rod Marinelli will also be, I think, on the defensive, one of the defensive, I think he's the defensive line coach, stepping in. This is setting up for a lot of speculation, and I've seen it reported on numerous venues. Very interestingly enough, with Kiffin, Marinelli, and Callahan, that was basically the core of John Gruden's staff when he was at Tampa Bay. Mm. There's been a lot of speculation that, in fact, if John Gruden were to come back to the NFL, one of his landing spots might just very well be Dallas. Speculation continues that perhaps maybe what Jones is doing here is he is trying to force Garrett to quit so that, in fact, he could put Gruden into the spot. It's interesting fodder for gossip. Let's put it that way.
Well, what do you think? You know what? Is this legit? Do you think it's going to be set up for failure so they can get John Gruden? Do you see that happening?
I don't understand why Garrett's sitting back passively except to say that, you know, I guess his attitude is, look, I got a contract, and if this is what you want to do, fine. Just, you know, just like what's his name said, who was it who said, so long as I get my check every Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, I guess maybe that's his thinking, but I'm going to tell you right now, if I were head coach, if I were Garrett, I've got a lot of pride. And I'm going to be damn pissed at this particular moment.
Well, who knows? I mean, is this a legit thing now that's coming out, or is this just?
Well, I don't know how legit it is, Jonathan. I mean, it's legit from the standpoint that Marinelli's in there, that Kiffin's in there, and that Callahan's in there.
Mm.
That's legit. That we know. Whether it's legit that in fact it's being set up for Gruden to walk in, that's speculation. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I think it makes for interesting speculation.
Yeah,
it
well,
does.
That's what happens when you sign with a team with an owner like Jerry Jones. I mean, this guy's going to be involved in everything, no matter what.
Yeah,
you know?
Jerry Jones is like Mr. Burns from The Simpsons, if you will. Think about it, because he's like, okay, Jason Garrett wants to call his own play, and then Smithers, no, you would call this play Smithers. No, seriously though, Jerry Jones is the epitome of micromanagement. He's taking over everything. It's to the point where Jason Garrett is head coach in name only.
I hear
I can't believe I'm going to say this as an Eagles fan. I actually feel a little sorry for Dallas fans. I really do. I kind of do. Because, I mean, they're getting screwed here any way you cut the cookie.
Well, they always get screwed.
Well, in more ways than one, but yes.
Yeah.
No, it's just, you know, this is America's team, quote unquote, and they're being run like a bad arena football team right now.
Yes.
So basically, okay, now if Jason Garrett fails this season, he's gone.
Yeah.
Is there a good chance Gruden is going to come to coach the Cowboys, or could they just bump up Monty Kiffin or Ryan Marinelli, who have head coaching experience?
Well, and see, this is where I have kind of sat back at times and scratched my head, because as Jim just pointed out, Jones is notorious for micromanagement.
Yeah.
I can't imagine Gruden, with his personality, would come in and put up with his crap.
Yeah.
He's just not the, you know. Gruden reminds me of a Parcells type. Let's get it straight. That's why Parcells, it didn't work down there in Dallas with Parcells. It didn't work there.
Mm-hmm.
I would see Gruden coming in and for a season or two turning into Barry Switzer, and then he's out the door.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Barry Switzer. Ugh.
Good comparison, though.
Yeah,
wait,
no,
wait,
it is
wait,
a good
wait,
comparison.
What? Ooh. They won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. But was it under Barry? Yeah, it was under Barry.
Yeah.
All right. Oh man, I tell you,
I'd like to forget
it's,
that.
You know what? It's
okay,
so hard.
Can anybody here seriously picture John Gruden putting up with Jerry Jones's crap?
No.
The Chucky face would be epic, though.
Oh yeah, it would be.
I'm sorry. I think there are a lot of coaches in the NFL who wouldn't put up with Jerry Jones's crap. And
well,
they,
of course. I think that's why he's got Jason Garrett.
And you know, Gruden's one of them. Yeah, exactly.
Garrett's yes, man, for no uncertain terms. The other thing with this, though, is if Gruden were to come aboard, there could definitely be dissension amongst the ranks of the coaching staff. I mean, you've got guys who, you know, have been head coaches in the league. Couldn't there be cause for dissension amongst the ranks as is?
I'm not sure I'm grabbing.
Well, no, I mean, like if you've got Kiffin, you've got the other guy,
Marinelli.
Could they? I mean, it's possible these three won't get along either.
But this was the core. This was the group. It was Marinelli, Callahan,
okay,
and Kiffin.
Okay, that's right. Well,
down with the Gruden in Tampa.
Years can do a lot to people, though. I don't know.
I hear you. But
well,
see, I think the fact that they're all positioned right now it, where they are, I think that's what's fueling some of the speculation that,
right.
What's going on here? Is Jones setting this team up for John Gruden? And I think that's what's fueling it.
I think the Botox has gotten to Jerry Jones' head seriously now. It's
if Gruden takes over Dallas, what's the over-under of him lasting there?
2 years.
I'd say 2 seasons.
Yeah.
2 seasons? Now, after he's done, do you have guys like Tony Romo, DeMarco Murray, joining the ranks of Michael Clayton, Jeff Garcia, and Simeon Rice calling Gruden a scumbag?
No, they'll call Jones a scumbag first, I think.
Well,
but,
let's hope.
They're already calling Jones a scumbag. So.
I mean, let's hope because let's put the blame at the feet where it belongs.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is a guy who lets people who kill people in other cars off scot-free and support them. I mean, that's the kind of, sick individual Jerry Jones is.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of sickos in the NFL, and I think Jerry Jones takes the cake. So.
All right, yes.
Let's switch it over a little bit to Major League Baseball. We had a trade over the last couple of days, actually yesterday. So let's talk about this right now, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the NL East. Atlanta Braves pulled off a big 7-player deal with the Arizona Diamondbacks, grabbing outfielder Justin Upton,
yes,
bringing him to Atlanta, uniting him with his brother, B.J. Upton, in the outfield.
Yes.
You read this. You saw the package. Braves really didn't give up a lot to get Justin Upton, which I was really shocked about because the consensus coming out of Arizona was they were looking to grab guys like Zach Wheeler, Matt Harvey, Travis d'Arnaud from the Mets to trade Upton, but this is the package that they get. Martin Prado, Chris Johnson. Chris Johnson went back to Atlanta. I'm not entirely sure who went with Prado, but I read it yesterday. It really wasn't a great package, but that's not what we're going to talk about here. Now what we're going to talk about is who is the better team in the NL East now? My opinion right now, right away, is I think it's the Braves. I think they have a lot of nice offensive power on that team now. Mike, you first. Who's the best team in the NL East?
Well, I mean, you just said you didn't think that they had to put out, they had to put out a lot to get Upton.
Yes.
I mean, if you don't consider $75.25 million over 5 years a lot, I think the contract that they signed him to is absolutely sick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's worth near that. That is a disgusting amount of money. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
His brother right now, 3 years, he's on a 3-year contract for $38 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't come anywhere near it. Who do I think is he actually the stronger team right now? Yeah, I think probably you'd have to give the nod at this particular moment to the Braves.
Yeah. They were 4 games behind last season of the Nationals. So let me throw this out to you real quick too, Mike. So while you're talking about the Braves here, and then we'll get to Jim. With Justin Upton in this lineup, would they have overtaken the Nationals for first place in the NL East last year?
I'm sorry, run that by me again.
I said with Upton in the lineup last year, if they would have had him last year, they were only 4 games behind. With both Uptons in the lineup and some of the upgrades they made, would they have been better than the Nationals last year? They were only 4 games behind.
That's a tough call. The Nationals were just playing out of their mind. Of course, here when you take a look at what the Nationals, a lot of their success came early in the season.
Yes.
They really did not play that well going down the stretch as they were closing the season out. I suppose it's very, very possible that the Braves could have made a run at them and may have overtaken them. But at the same time, I don't know, man. I don't know. The Nationals were awful good. They were awful good last season.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to wait and see. It's certainly at this point right now, in my opinion, a two-horse race between the Nats and the Braves.
No.
Everybody else is out of it, in my opinion. I would put the Mets in third place at this point right now, and then it's going to be a fight for the bottom between the Phils and the Marlins.
I think Marlins are going to be in last place from the first game on.
I think it's going to be a battle between the Phils and the Marlins.
No, I think the Phillies will be a little bit better than the Marlins. You have to give them at least that. Jim, what do you think?
Good thing I'm wearing my Phillies 2008 World Series champion shirt as I do this.
Long time ago, my friend.
Yeah, well, memories.
Good memory.
I think Washington's still the team to beat in this division, all seriousness. The Upton acquisition would have helped the Braves. I don't know that it would have made the difference, though, because Washington's pitching from top to bottom of the rotation is just too good. And with Steven Strasburg this season being, quote-unquote, extended to 200 innings.
200?
Oh,
my goodness.
Oh, Santa Maria. But, you know, and I'm sorry, they're going to ruin that poor kid's arm. They're really going to ruin that poor kid's arm. But I think top to bottom, the lineup as well, I think the Nationals have a still slightly better lineup and have every chance in the world to repeat as division champions.
Okay. Now, you also have to remember Dan Haran, too, is now in the Washington starting lineup.
Correct.
Yeah, that helps.
I agree, though, with Jonathan. It's certainly what we've got here with this whole trade is you certainly have to put the Braves absolutely right there in the conversation.
Agreed. They are a wild card team at the very, very least. They can contend for the division, no doubt.
Yes.
God, it pains me to say that.
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah, but you got to say it though. Both our teams suck.
The show of record. Yeah.
I hear you.
You know that's why we are fans of the sport. More than anything. So.
Oh, and we hate the Braves over here.
Well, listen, man, nobody hates the Braves more than New Yorkers, man. We've had many, many, many years of Chipper Jones coming into Shea and killing us. So.
Well, it's very interesting. It's very interesting because so many people think, well, or say, you know, the Phils' greatest rival are the Mets. I'll tell you, here at the frat house, it's the Braves.
Yeah.
Yeah, I honestly don't even think the Mets and Phillies are the biggest rivals out of the East. To me, that only started a bunch of years back. I don't think.
Jim, you're a Philly guy. I mean, who's the Phils' rival?
To me, it's Atlanta. Every time Atlanta comes in, you hate them like there's no tomorrow. I believe wasn't it Atlanta we played when JD Drew came back?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was St. Louis, I think. I take that back. I was going to make the reference to being at the J.D. Drew game, which was hilarious. But, it's the Braves. The Braves are the biggest rival. The Mets are second because of what's happened in 2007 most recently. Sorry, John.
I think the Braves rivalry dates back to 93. That's
exactly.
What I think it is.
I actually agree with both of you guys. I think even from the Mets side, I think their biggest rival is the Braves, which started definitely around 1990, 1991, and it's still going today. Philly's definitely second. Marlins and Nationals, who cares right now?
Like in the NFL, everybody hates the Cowboys. Everybody hates the Braves in Major League Baseball and the Yankees.
Bingo. Bingo. And yet in football, what's interesting is everybody says that the Eagles' greatest rival are the Giants. To me, it's always been the Dallas Cowboys.
Of course.
No. Well, everybody wants to throw their teams into the mix, so that's usually the way it always goes. All right, well, off of baseball, we only got 14 minutes left in this show, so real quick, Greg, we got two Flyers fans here, because I'm the Lone Ranger fan. Let's talk about the game from last night.
All right.
Two sloppy teams met, and Mike, you said it best, but the Rangers were the sloppier team.
Yes.
Which they lost, 2-1. I said it last night, my Rangers deserve to lose because they played awful. If it wasn't for Henrik Lundqvist, this would have been a 6-1 or a 7-1 game last night.
That's a good point.
Now, from what you've seen, Mike, from both sides of the puck, and you said it yourself, both teams were sloppy. Mm-hmm. What did the Flyers do better than the Rangers last night that they were able to win 2-1?
Puck movement, dude. Puck movement. That's what it came down to.
Absolutely.
They were moving the puck around the offensive zone like we have not seen the Flyers do in the first three games. I'm going to be honest with you, I was a little bit surprised that they were able to do it with as much ease as they did against the Rangers. I frankly thought that your defense was going to play us a little bit tougher. I also thought that with us, without what? We were missing two of our starters out of the defensive line. I really thought that you would have been able to muster up a heck of a lot more than 19 shots on goal.
Yeah, they were just awful last night. Awful. They
When you take a look at the period by period breakdown, this game was won by the Flyers in the first and second period.
Absolutely.
11 shots on goal to 5 for the Flyers in the first period. 17 shots on goal to 8 for the Flyers in the second period. Really, when it comes right down to it, Brizgalov looks a little bit better this season. I hear a lot of people talking about, he looks so much better. No, he doesn't. He's the same stinking Brizgalov that we've seen now for the past year. All right? The guy's got probably some of the worst lateral movement left to right in the goal crease that I've seen of any goaltender in years.
Yeah.
And you just weren't getting the shots on goal.
Which is weird because he didn't move like that in Phoenix. I really don't know what his problem is.
I don't know whether he has a sight peripheral issue that he just has difficulty seeing left to right.
Well, you
that
know why?
Guy can't move.
Because he stares at the sun with his telescope.
Because
he is Mr. Universe.
He's the most interesting man.
He is the most interesting man in Philadelphia.
That is outstanding. Very good. Touche.
Touche. No, but listen, it's the truth. Jim, did you watch the game last night?
Actually, I was on assignment calling a double overtime basketball game, but I picked up the bits and pieces of various things from the game. To the Brizgalov point, I can speak to that. Maybe he's not better than he was last year, but you cannot deny, Mike, and John as well, he has kept this team in games they should not have been in.
Agreed.
This season. Because, I mean, and you can always equate, well, everybody's going to say, it's because of 6-month layoff. You know what? Every team has had a 6-month layoff.
Everybody is in the same boat right now. Right.
So it's bunkum to throw that out. But he has kept he's kept this Flyers team in games they shouldn't have been kept in. Granted, they all lost those first three games because the defense is anemic. And what's killing the Flyers more than anything else right now, it's the special teams.
No doubt about it.
It's the anemic power play. And listen, as a Flyer fan for 15-plus years, I'm used to an anemic power play. Pass, pass, wait, shut the freaking puck!
Uh-huh, yep.
But the penalty kill unit, when you are on the penalty kill, and I think it was in the first three games, they had given up goals on about half of their penalty killing opportunities, that's a red flag.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's where the problem lies, and losing Mazzaros doesn't help either.
Yeah. Well, let me throw this out there, too, to you guys. If this was the Rangers of last year and they were able to pepper Brizgalov with 30-plus shots last night, would it have been a 2-1 game?
No. The Rangers would have won.
Yeah.
Oh, they would have won by 2 or 3 goals, probably.
Yeah. I, listen, They weren't going to score no 5 or 6 goals last night, but if they would have peppered him with 30-plus shots, they could have easily at least tied it and brought this into overtime last night.
I've got no shame in saying if you look at the rosters, okay, on paper, the Rangers should be a better team.
Yes. Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely.
On paper, they are a better team, and unfortunately, they're just not. And you know what? I'm going to give that, you know, I'm going to put that problem on everybody's shoulder, from John Tortorella right on down to the last player on the roster. You know, Tortorella's going to do his coaching, Mike Sullivan's going to do his coaching, whatever, but they can't put the puck in the net for these players.
May I ask a question, John? When it comes to Tortorella, has he gone off the deep end yet up there in New York?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, actually.
He went off a little bit on Newsday reporter Steve Zabay last night. It was pretty funny.
Yes,
oh,
it was.
Yes, I liked
that's
it.
That's a gift that keeps on giving. I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
I like it.
He is a delight to watch. He really is.
He is. Listen, I don't care what anybody says. I love John Tortorella. So.
I think he's a riot.
Yeah.
He's an absolute riot.
I love him. He makes me laugh, man. He does.
Indeed.
If anything else. Okay, so let's put it this way. Still early on. Both teams out 1-3. Mm-hmm. When is it time to start panicking, Jim, in your opinion? Because Mike and I spoke, and we were talking about probably the 10 to 12 game mark.
Yeah, that's the equivalent of a quarter of a season. I think that's exactly right. I think when you get to talk to me in like 2 or 3 weeks, and then we may have some discussion about what to do.
Yeah. You know what's bad? When the Islanders can score 7 goals and the Flyers and barely are up 1-3 in a game.
Welcome to Bizarro World.
Yeah, but I think here's where I think we as fans have to kind of pause and just step back for a moment.
Yeah.
You can't judge what's happening right now against any other seasons before.
No, because it's this is not last season. It's
exactly.
This is a totally different season.
Locked, exactly.
No camps, no preseasons.
Right.
It's going to take a lot of teams getting ready to go.
Right.
Los Angeles Kings still haven't won a game. Calgary hasn't won a game. Washington hasn't won a game. Philly, Rangers, Phoenix, Detroit, Vancouver, Nashville only have won 1 game this season so far.
Right.
That's not going to stay that way. It's
exactly. And that's why
this isn't an 82-game schedule where you can go a few games without winning or winning just a handful of games here and there. When you get to that 6-game mark, and then when you get to that 10-12 game mark, that's when you're really going to have to start making some changes.
Correct, and that's why I think that's why we put the kind of line of demarcation at about the 12-game point.
Yeah.
You know, these things that Jim just brought up with regard to the Flyers and their special teams, the power play and the penalty killing, you're right on, Jim. You're absolutely right on. At the same time, I see a lot of it as being an issue of chemistry.
Sure. I don't disagree with that at all. And pretty much, if you get on a 5 or 6-game winning streak, as dumb as this sounds, you're almost guaranteed a playoff spot at this point. I know it's early
Correct.
To say that. But the team that catches fire and catches fire quickly, they're automatically at least an 8 seed. So,
yeah.
You know.
But look at that, man. Chicago, Ottawa, New Jersey, San Jose, undefeated so far. Chicago, 8 points on the season already.
Well,
yeah.
Jonathan and I had put, again, talking about lines of demarcation, you've got to look at this season and strategize it completely differently. Not only as a head coach, not only as any kind of coach inside of an organization, but I think also as an analyst and as a fan. You've got to strategize this season completely differently. Jonathan and I put the line of demarcation to get into the playoffs at about 25 wins.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. 25 wins get you in. Doesn't look that good right now for most teams, but hopefully they can start turning it around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 6 minutes left in the show. We have a thing here, Jim. I don't know if you've heard. We
mm-hmm.
like to bash the Lakers a little bit.
Oh, that's fun. I'm down with that.
Yeah, it's always fun. So very easy to do this year, but we're going to have to talk about this one because, to me, this is funny. Not only did they lose again, but they had a little airing out at a practice where Kobe Bryant – goes up to Dwight Howard and says, "Let me know if you don't like playing with me." Dwight Howard came out, even though it was reported by many people, including people on the Lakers, that this happened. Dwight Howard is saying, "No, that never happened." Mike, what the hell is going on with this team, man? We keep asking ourselves that, and we can't figure it out.
Yeah, somebody, I heard a story last night. I'm trying to remember exactly what the line was, but I sat here completely aghast. a bunch of us here were here from the frat house, and story comes on, and it's all about the Lakers, and there was a comment made that, what, Dwight Howard is the one that's destroying this team? And I sat back and I said, Dwight Howard's destroying the team? Are you kidding me? Kobe Bryant's destroying this team.
Thank you.
But if this is true, and Kobe Bryant has actually come out and asking Dwight, do you not like playing with me? Let's see if we can fix it. That's not the Kobe Bryant we're used to.
Well,
you have to wonder, is that coming from the higher-ups making Kobe do this now so
okay,
they
wait,
can
wait.
Keep Dwight Howard?
All right, well, hold on. There's a way you can ask that question, and based on intonation, it can be taken one way, and based on intonation, it can be taken another way.
Yeah.
Okay? I could ask that question to Dwight Howard, look at him with a sneer in my face, and go, what the hell's your problem, dude? You don't like playing with me?
Yeah.
Or is it more like this? Hey, Dwight, dude, I don't know, man. We got to get our act together. Are you having trouble working with me?
Yeah. Well, it was a calm sequence. Everybody spoke. Steve Nash was able to speak and, you know, put his experience into the mix and so, you know, basically say, hey, listen, guys, this is what we need to do. And this is what we have to stop doing. And everybody basically got something, you know, had something to say. And then when it was Kobe Bryant's turn, he just, you know, whatever he spoke, said what he had to say. And then he asked Dwight, hey, do you not like playing with me? So from what I read and from what I'm getting from people was – he wasn't asking, like, hey, if you don't like playing me, get the hell out of here. He wanted to know from Dwight specifically, do you not like playing with me? And I think if he would have said, yeah, I think he probably would have asked why. And then after that, he probably would have said, well, get the hell out of here. It's my team.
Exactly.
The Los Angeles Lakers have become the Festivus episode of Seinfeld, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
We've got the airing of the grievances, but they all lack the feats of strength. That's the problem right here. Kobe Bryant is that franchise and will be until he retires in, like, what is it, 5 years he says he's going to retire or less than that. It's interesting, and one wonders how long D'Antoni's going to last in Los Angeles, even if it's the season at this point.
Yeah.
Because right now they need to win 25 or 30 games to even get within the realm of possibility of getting into the playoffs out west. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
I don't see it.
You know, it's and there's going to be a lot of dissension in Los Angeles, and I personally can't wait to watch it.
Yeah. I agree.
It's great. 14 games back. Golden State second place, 4.5 games back on a 3-game winning streak. Clippers lost again last
baby.
Night. Yep. Mark Jackson was the one I wanted in New York, but I got to give the credit to Mike Woodson. He's doing a good job there. So
I don't know, Jim. I'm going to throw this out there. I threw it out in one of the other shows. I don't think the Lakers can afford to absorb firing a second coach within one season.
Don't do it in the off season.
I agree.
It'll
happen. Listen, Mike D'Antoni is not a good coach. I've witnessed that in New York. He had some success in Phoenix, but he's a better college coach than he would be an NBA coach.
As you pointed out before, Jonathan, he signed a 4-year deal with them, didn't he?
Oh, that's, you know what? That's the bus's fault.
I hear you.
Fools in Los Angeles.
Yep.
All right, well, we only got very few seconds left, so first I want to